Extra time.
He shoots, and it's a goal!
That's right. It's actually happened. Football Daily have released an episode of Sunday Vibes Extra Time. Joining me today in the studio, Patrick Van Straten.
Hi.
Doogie Critchley.
Hello.
Today we are running down our team of the season, but for under 23 players. So keep your ears peeled for Wonder Kids for next year's FIFA and Football Manager. Should we kick it off, gentlemen?
Let's do it.
Okay, so as Joe said, it is a team of the season. So there might be some players in here who are maybe not the best in their position at their age group, but they have been the best this year, we think. Anyway,
yes.
We settled on four guys who had to make our 11 straight away. They obviously are Kylian Mbappe, Jadon Sancho, Matthijs de Ligt, and FD favourite Aaron Wan-Bissaka.
Yes.
But the other seven spots were up for grabs. So we've all picked a keeper, a centre-back, a left-back, three central midfielders, because we're playing a 4-3-3, and a left winger. So, who would like to commence with their goalkeeper?
Why don't you go for it, Pat?
Lead us off.
Straight
Come
in.
On.
Yeah.
I've gone for Alban Lafont.
Formerly
of Toulouse, now Fiorentina. He's 20.
How did they get him? Because he was linked to everybody, Alban Lafont.
And also, they got him for not that much. They paid 7 million euros for him last summer, which is really not that much. But Fiorentina have started this really strong collection of young players. You know, they've got Milenkovic there, they've got Chiesa there, they've got Giovanni Simeone. So they've actually got a ton of talent, as well as some older guys who are quite interesting, like Jordan Vertu. But Lafont, in his last two seasons at Toulouse, he played 74 of 76 league matches. And in both seasons, the club conceded fewer goals than XG predicted.
Good.
So that could be a coincidence, but I'd say that over a couple of years like that, that suggests that Lafont is probably an above average shot stopper. And he was doing the same thing at the beginning of the season with Fiorentina.
Yeah.
They've tailed off a little bit since then. They had a really hot start to the campaign. I think they were fourth after 2 months of the season.
Mm.
And they've slipped down now. But he just seems like he's an excellent shot stopper. He's huge. He's 6'3", I think, despite being so young. He still looks like he needs to fill out a bit. But there are only six under 23 keepers to have played over 2,500 minutes in Europe's top five leagues this season. And Lafont is one of them. Really good passer as well. I found that he's hitting six accurate long balls a game, which is not like, when a keeper does that for a team like Burnley, you understand it. Or for Fulham, where you've got somebody hugely dominant up front.
Yeah, Chris Wood up front.
Yeah, who's going to win every header. But Giovanni Simeone, he's good in the air, but he's not like an all-conquering, you know, like aerial beast. So the fact that he's hitting these long balls suggests to me that he's a pretty good passer. And so I think, to be honest as well, at this age, what you just really need is minutes. If you're getting the minutes consistently, chances are you'll turn out to be at least decent. And Lafont is getting tons and tons of minutes. Now he's in his second of Europe's top five leagues and he still looks good.
Yeah, I mean, I was a bit worried about the move because he was obviously so young when he moved.
Yeah.
And it was such a small sample size, but very impressive. Much more impressive than I thought he was going to be.
How much longer do you think it'll be before Hugo Lloris gets the sort of chop at national level and Lafont gets in permanently?
I think there are actually some other candidates.
Okay.
I think Joe's
I'm bringing one. Yeah.
Joe's got a French goalkeeper. So I think, as in every position, the French seem to have extraordinary depth. But I don't know. I still think Lloris has been very good for the national team. And I think this season, actually, the first two thirds of the season were sensational from Lloris. But now there's this narrative that Lloris is a bad keeper. I think people notice his errors more, and he is error prone. So I think he'll be there for another couple of years. I think captaining them to a World Cup probably gets him a little bit of leeway.
Although nearly messed it all up in that final.
Well, he didn't nearly mess it all up. Like, I mean, like,
well, it was 2-1 at that stage.
But they were going to win the game. Like, I mean, like, they were still 2-0 up. It wasn't like he made it level. It wasn't like he gave them the lead. Like, is it great?
Yeah.
No, but like, keepers,
I just have a bit of a vendetta against Hugo Lloris.
The thing is, I just can't think of a keeper that doesn't make silly errors like that. Even Ter Stegen does. Alisson does. De Gea does.
De Gea
and
does.
It's not as if he's got a Ter Stegen breathing down his neck. The keepers that we're all talking about here, your Alban Lafont, the name that I'm going to talk about, aren't absolutely killing it, demanding moves.
Dead set.
He's still a fine keeper.
Think about someone like Bernd Leno. Like, Bernd Leno is not a top level prospect at all. But he got his move to Arsenal at 26. He's now 27. You know, Lafon has 7 years until he gets to that point.
Yeah.
He could develop at Fiorentina for over half a decade and then still get a move to a top side and still get, you know, 400, 500 appearances for them. It's perfectly possible.
And so, at that age, you know, garnering experience is the key, really. I remember when David De Gea was a similar age at Man United and he was not great for his first 6 to 8 months.
Although I will say Italian teams, I think Italian teams need to start selling quicker. Because I think a lot of Italian teams kind of run on this sort of idea that we can get another season out of them and they'll be excellent. Like, I feel like Lazio 100% should have cashed in on Milinkovic-Savic in the summer. They're not going to see 100 million euro bids.
I mean, Belotti is the classic example.
Belotti is an absolutely classic example.
When they could have had 100 million
euro bid. So I feel like they are starting to learn, hence...
So I think that's an analytics issue. I think if Torino had like an analytics department, they'd have said to them, this guy has massively overperformed this season. This is when we sell. You know, like the same thing could happen with, say, Leon Bailey at Leverkusen, though he wasn't overperforming last year. He's underperforming this year. So because he's underperforming this year, you might well see him go for 10 or 20 mil less than they were talking about last summer. Because he's got, I think, 6 goals and assists against an expected total of 9. So that's the kind of thing that can knock 10 mil off your price. And clubs are going to need to start looking into this stuff or they're going to get gouged by cleverer clubs.
Yeah, I agree. Who have you gone for, Dukes?
Right, so I've gone for sort of man of the moment, definitely in the team of the moment, Ajax keeper Andre Onana. He's actually at the upper end of this scale. He's 23. He actually started out at the Samuel Eto'o Foundation in Cameroon, which basically provides health and education to disadvantaged children and also provides 100 children a year with free football education. From then, he then went to Barcelona, aged 13, spent 6 years there before he joined Ajax in January 2015. He instantly went into their second team, played 37 games for Young Ajax, I think is how you pronounce it, over his first season and a half. And then at the end of the 15-16 season, Jasper Cillessen left to join Barcelona for 13 million euros and Onana became first choice. 16-17 season, played 32 Eredivisie games. Ajax conceded 23 goals in that time. Best record in the division defensively alongside PSV, but finished 1 point behind Feyenoord. Also reached the Europa League final, beating the likes of Schalke and Lyon along the way before losing to Man United 2-0. Great first season at the club, especially for a 20-year-old as well.
Yeah.
And then last year, played 33 Eredivisie games, missed just one. Ajax conceded 33 goals in 34 games, which doesn't sound great, but that was 5 fewer than anyone else. But it didn't help them. They still finished 4 points behind PSV. This year, they've conceded 30 goals in 33 games so far, but 13 of those have come in 3 league games. Quite weirdly, Ajax have had some shocking games defensively. So they lost 3-0 away at PSV. They drew 4-4 with Heerenveen, and they also lost 6-2 away at Feyenoord.
Yeah, crazy.
And yet, with 2 games to play, they lead the table by goal difference. So despite having these pretty debilitating losses to some of their key rivals, they're still right up there. Conceded 5 goals in 6 Champions League group games, 3 to Real Madrid and 2 to Juventus. So these don't sound like unbelievable stats in a way. And his clean sheet last night against Spurs was just his first since the group stages. But if you watch him play, he does have just the most incredible physical attributes. He's incredibly fast. He's really agile. He's a superb shot stopper and he's very good at coming and claiming balls in the air. He does have sort of occasional errors in him, as all keepers do.
Especially young keepers. Like, I feel like young keepers always have a tendency to rush out from corners and then don't get it wrong.
He's almost, in a weird way, he's almost too fast for his own good. He seems to rush off and get his angle slightly wrong at times, leaving slight gaps in different corners of his goals.
I just think he's an Eredivisie keeper. I just think, like, in the Eredivisie, like, you get centre-backs running forwards, and so the keeper needs to be quick off the mark, you know, whereas in a bigger league, you're like, you're meant to stay home a bit and be a bit more commanding. But I mean, like, the only problem with this is, like, I understand what you're saying, like, about Ajax being kind of defensively dominant generally, but it's really hard. This is by far the hardest position we've got to deal with, I think, because, like, without, like, advanced analytics stuff, you basically just end up saying the defence he was in was good.
He's paying for a good
and
side.
We assume that he was good. He didn't let the side down, basically.
The one thing I do like about Onana, though, is that he, like, I feel like that brand of goalkeeper went away for a little bit when Neuer obviously flew out the ranks as being that sort of sweeper keeper. And then I feel like over the last 2 to 3 years, it's kind of gone back to being a shot stopper mold as the best goalkeeper in the world.
Well, yeah, 100%.
In somebody like De Gea, who doesn't like to come off his line. In fact, he's actually better on his line.
But I think that's just coincidental that De Gea happens to be that sort of keeper and happens to be... Like Alisson, for instance, yeah, and Edison are both very, very good keepers. I think they're much more...
That's why I think Onana will suit some of the top clubs in Europe that yeah. are willing to play a much higher defensive line, because he's willing to fly out from his goal line and play outside the box almost.
Well, unsurprisingly, there's links with his former club Barcelona quite a lot. So Jasper Cillessen is up for sale this summer.
Where's
Ter
going?
And there's talks, well, he's not going anywhere, but there's talks of Onana being brought in as his backup, which I don't think is the best move for
him
right
now. I don't think he'd go. I think he'd say no.
Yeah,
well, no, no, because in November, he said that Barcelona has always been my home and going back there would be a dream. He also said that De Jong and De Ligt should go to Barcelona.
Yeah, but they're going to go and start. Like, I think it's different. There's a difference between saying, yeah, of course De Ligt and De Jong should go because they'll start, and saying, I'm going to go, but, like, clearly I'll be behind Ter Stegen.
Yeah,
like,
I agree with you. I think Cillessen, he should leave.
But... Cillessen said the same thing, right? Cillessen was like, De Jong and De Ligt should go. But he was like, it's shit and I want to leave.
He should hold out
on the bench.
Especially, like, I understand that they're probably going to use Areola in the long term, but like PSG are going to look to move on from Buffon at some stage.
Yeah.
So I don't think you'll ever find a lack of top clubs looking for a goalkeeper. Like De Gea may end up leaving Man United this summer. There's going to always be options for a goalkeeper of his
standard. And if De Gea leaves Man United, then it would feel like, say, Oblak might leave Atleti. And that to me feels like the natural next step for someone like Onana. Like, I realise that Ajax in their current form, and in Atleti's current form, like Ajax are way ahead of them.
Mm.
But overall, you could imagine Onana saying, my next step is to go and play in La Liga under an elite coach, or a guy perceived as an elite coach, where he will put up absolutely ridiculous shot-stopping numbers. Can you imagine? Like, so I don't know. Like, I think that we're seeing younger players get a bit more savvy about where they go.
Yeah, 100%. But he would seem to fit in that sort of style. So he's doing 28 passes per... Champions League game this year, which is more than Edison managing for Man City. So he's very comfortable with the ball at his feet, and that's kind of unsurprising seeing as he grew up at La Masia. There's also clubs like West Ham, Arsenal and Spurs apparently interested in him. I don't know why Arsenal would necessarily, I suppose, as a backup when Cech retires, but Spurs would be a good move for him, potentially a long-term replacement for Lloris. But yeah, he's under contract until June 2022. Valued about €35 million. I don't think you should leave this summer.
Dortmund could use a keeper. I tell you.
That's a good point, actually.
I mean, like, I still...
Is it still Weidenfeller? Who is it?
It's Berkey.
Oh, it's Roman Berkey.
Near post Berkey.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Dortmund would be a good option. Moving on to mine quickly then.
Actually, Bayern as well. Bayern, Neuer's...
Oh, God, yeah.
Neuer's cooked, man.
I feel like they will probably snap up somebody like Oblak or something.
Yeah, we'll just promote Sven Ulrich. He's one of their best players last year.
Yeah, but he's
not
young.
Young, though. He's like 30, something like that. Yeah. Moving on to mine then, and apologies for this pronunciation. Pato has informed me it is Mike Maignan. Is that right,
yeah,
Pato?
We're going good.
For that?
That's
Mike Maignan. I'm just going to call
Sounds
him
like
Mike.
True native.
I'll be honest, I'm going to call him Mike or Mikey exclusively throughout this section. But I am talking about the 23-year-old shot stopper from Lille, who have obviously had an incredible season this year, finishing what looks to be second in the division, if they can pip Lyon over the next few games. He's got the most minutes of any player in that Lille side. And of course, Lille have the best defence in the entirety of Ligue 1, better than PSG, just 28 goals conceded. I think that's the sixth best defence in Europe. Don't quote me on that exactly, but City, Liverpool, Atletico, Leipzig and Juve definitely better than them. But I think beyond that, they're probably up there with one of the top numbers. And it's not as if they're massively outperforming expected goals. You know, obviously, if you're a goalkeeper that is conceding less than expected goals says, then you're probably doing well. So he is about 6 ahead of expected goals against.
Okay.
I think they should have conceded something like 34 and they've instead conceded 28. So still pretty impressive. You know, PSG have conceded 30 and they are battering teams with about 80% possession most of the time, which Lille just aren't. He's actually only conceded 17 goals from open play this season.
Wow.
Which is a crazy number. And I get that maybe his decision making might not be the best. But this is a player who over the last week has been heavily linked to PSG. Like, okay, consistently. He is a PSG boy, so he came through the PSG academy and they let him go to Lille, I believe, in 2015. So a lot of the French newspapers, particularly L'Équipe, kind of saying that he is going to end up going back there, potentially, okay, as Areola's backup.
Okay.
And then battling with Areola for the first team. So I think Areola's only, what, 25, 26, not particularly yeah, not old himself. Like that, yeah. Whereas Buffon, do we think Buffon's going to get another season? Can't.
There's so much chat around him not, but I'm not entirely sure.
If they give him another, if they give him another season, that to me would be a signal that they're not going to get Maignan and they're going to wait until next year and try and get De Gea on a free.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all. He's also known as a bit of a penalty specialist. He's saved throughout his career 50% of the penalties he's faced.
Bloody hell.
Which is pretty impressive. I think so far this season he's faced 14 in Ligue 1 and saved 7 of them, or 8 of them. So he is known as a bit of a penalty specialist.
That's lethal.
He's won Lille a lot of points from penalty saves this season. And I think he might have saved one in the 5-1 battering, actually, against PSG. Because obviously they tore PSG apart, didn't they, when Nicolas Pepe did a madness. But I'll throw Mike Maignan into the hat. But I would vote Onana. I wanted to go Onana from the offset.
I mean, he's on for a treble.
If he wins the treble, it's definitely Onana.
I think you have to give it to Onana because of what their clubs have done. But I think in terms of who's actually been the better keeper this season, I think that Maignan's probably the best shout here.
I haven't watched enough.
A couple of other names as well people wanted mentioned. Gianluigi Donnarumma. We didn't feel like he's done quite enough. Whatever. AC Milan's back line. I feel like he's a FIFA name. You know, people look at him and he's highly rated on FIFA and he's been about since he was 15 and he's been 6'8" since he was 12.
Good comeback, to be fair, from his, you know, being hated by most of the fans and being thrown money at in an Italian under 21 game.
Yeah.
Seems to have refound his feet, but no, I don't think he's on.
There was a bunch of these guys scale. In Italy. They always have young keepers. There's Radu at Genoa, there's Aldero, there seem to be a few of them, but yeah, I'm perfectly happy to put Onana in.
Okay, we're putting Onana in as the goalkeeper. So right back, we've already got locked in as Aaron Wan Bissaka. Alongside him, we've already got locked in Matthias De Ligt. Centre-back options, Pato. Who are you going to partner De Ligt with?
I've got Konate out of RB Leipzig. I think there might be an argument that Upamecano may be the more mature defender in a way, but I also thought about Longley here. I thought about Abdou Diallo.
Longley 23.
I was tempted by Longley as well. I was tempted by Longley.
Longley is.
But I feel like PK's had one of the seasons of his life.
Has he?
Yeah.
Particularly in the last few months.
The protection in front of them has been horrific as well this season. Like, gradually, the midfield has got really, really boring this year because they know that like none of them can run anymore. But yeah, I've gone for Konate because while Pamecano's got about 1,200 minutes in the league, Konate's got 2,200.
Wow.
So he's been pretty much never present. The defence has allowed 24 goals in 31 games, so they have got the best defensive record in Germany. They are beating XG by a lot, but they're still the second best defence in Germany by XG. And Konate is 19 years old. He's 2.5 months older than De Ligt. So this is an extremely young backline. Came in from Sochaux in 2017. He's 6'4", and he looks it. I mean, seriously, it looks
he's leggy, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a giant. But he's just a really good active defender. He's like your quintessential proactive defender.
He feels like a bit of an Issa Diop. Whenever I watch Issa Diop fly out of the line, did you watch Issa Diop against Tottenham?
When I didn't.
He picked, there was a moment where Issa Diop flew out of the line, picked the ball up on the halfway line, nicked in front, and then dribbled past two players, went through one on one with the goalkeeper,
and scuffed
his shot, but forced a good save. Yeah, I mean, if you're going to agree. He flew out of the line to pick up the ball on the halfway line off of, I believe it's like Christian Eriksen sort of areas.
Well, I mean, the depth of French centre-backs at the moment is obscene. Like, after the first choice guys, you get Longley, you get Laporte, who still is uncapped, I think. You get Diallo, you get Zagadou, you get Konate, you get Upamecano. Like, they go on forever. You get Nordi Mukiele. Like, so
Laporte.
So I think Konate, yeah, like, he looks like he's going to be a regular. 4 tackles and interceptions a match, a lot of interceptions.
That
which
is
to
insane.
To me suggests that he's like a good reader of the game. And when he tries to make a tackle, you almost never get past him because he's so big and strong, as well as having good anticipation. 85% success rate in the challenges he's attempted. So he seems like a smart player as well as a strong player, which I like. He wins a higher percentage of his aerial duels than Kalidou Koulibaly.
Wow.
Who I kind of used as like your classic aerially dominant centre back. Passing, hard to say. I looked at his passing accuracy and it's 77%, and that immediately worried me. But Leipzig play extremely directly. They ask their centre backs to sort of boot it forward quite quickly. And they're third from bottom of the Bundesliga for team pass accuracy.
How do you think he's going to fare then under Nagelsmann?
I think he'll be totally fine because it's not like he can't pick a pass. It's not like he's being asked to do things and he's completely incapable of it. He's just being asked to punt it upfield as quickly as possible, try and get it into the forwards. I imagine that he'll play probably on the right of a back three under Nagelsmann. That would be my sense, unless he gets bought this summer, which is possible. And he really likes to push up into the channel. Like, he'll push up and support the right back. Sometimes the right back will drop in and he'll get forward. Like, he's really active at running into the midfield to make interceptions. So I think he'll actually suit Nagelsmann really well. I'm quite excited about what Konate can be, and he's been linked to Arsenal, which is exciting.
He has been heavily linked. I mean, I don't know how much he costs at this stage, because I feel like Leipzig are probably dealing pretty big numbers.
I reckon you're looking at 35 minimum.
That's not even too bad, though, is it? That's not too bad at all. Have you got anything else on Impato? Are we moving on to the next suggestion?
We've got a lot of players to cover.
I'm quite pleased with this one, actually. I'm going for Akanji, the 23-year-old at Dortmund. Obviously, came through at a club called FC Winterthur in Switzerland, then moved to Basel. Really shone in the 17-18 Champions League. So last year, Basel did really well. They finished second behind Man United. They won four of their six games. They beat Benfica 5-0, CSKA 2-0 away from home. Never an easy place to go. And beat Man United 1-0 at home. Akanji showed that he could really handle that level sort of instantly, really. Sort of 2.9 tackles and interceptions per 90, 54 passes per game, 86% pass accuracy. For Basel, like really quite impressive numbers. That January, he signed for Borussia Dortmund for 18 million euros, and he's made 37 appearances in the 15 months since. He's obviously had a few injuries in that time as well. This year, five separate injuries. I've seen him miss 13 games, so nothing too serious, but the worst of which was a hip injury that kept him out for 6 weeks that he only came back from in mid-February. 22 tackles and interceptions. 2.2 tackles and interceptions, not that dominant, but this is a Dortmund side that do see a lot of the ball, and he is one of the key men for them in building up their play. So 70.9 passes per game, which is only topped by Witzel in the Dortmund squad. That's the ninth best record in Germany, and a 92.6% pass accuracy, which is only topped by three players in Germany, and five long balls completed per game. And I watched some of his highlights this morning, first thing, and it was just the most calming thing in the world, just watching him just stride forward and ping balls into midfield at pace. And he's upped his game in the Champions League as well. 4.4 tackles and interceptions, 113 passes per game is his average, a 95% pass completion, which is only topped by Stones and company in the competition.
But they've not been great defensively, Dortmund.
They've been shaky in the last few months, definitely.
No, but even at the start of the season, like I just don't think they're... I think they're the fourth best team in Germany.
Like I saw a...
at best.
I actually saw a graph today of their expected goals against at the... first three games of the season comparatively to their most recent expected goals against. Now obviously, like, Favre does have a little bit of a history of outperforming expected goals models, doesn't he? So take it with a pinch of salt, but they are obviously outperforming expected goals defensively by 17.
Yeah,
I think they've conceded like 54.
They do have a very young backline, to be fair.
Kanji
is the oldest at 23.
But in the first, I think the first 5 weeks of the season
of their centre backs,
their expected goals against was something like 1.7, and then in the last 5 weeks, like most recently, their expected goals against has been 0.6.
I mean, I can't pretend to be able to explain that. That is freakish. But to blame it all on Akanji,
I'm not blaming it all on Akanji.
No, but Leipzig also have a really young defensive line, and they've got a great defence. Like,
but
I mean,
equally, this might be the Favre effect, where a bit like Sean
Dyche, pretty open in midfield.
Hard to take into account just an incredible amount of blocks and stuff like that, which may well be the case.
Yeah, Akanji's a really good defender. I think that he's probably a better defender overall than Konate, but I'm not sure whether he's had a better season. Like, I think
that's possibly fair.
I think they're a bit of a flawed
especially
system.
With injuries.
He also, with a few injuries in there as well. But to, you know, to keep this level of performance, at least statistically, he's also won 72% of his aerial duels.
Yeah, he's a big guy.
He's big. Well, he's only 6'1".
He looks massive.
Small.
Maybe it's because his head's small.
He's very lanky, but he's exceptional on the ball. I think he should definitely be considered.
Okay, I'm gonna throw another Bundesliga name into the hat. This is the Bundesliga centre-back list of youngsters at the moment. I'm sending Nicolas Sula forward for Bayern Munich in terms of centre-back options. Still only 23.
On first glance, this looks like a tough sell.
Still only 23. It isn't...
Because of Bayern's season, it looks like a tough sell.
It does, but some of Bayern's underlying numbers are far better than some of... They've been extremely unfortunate if you look at some of the underlying numbers.
I would agree with that.
They are comfortably the best team in Germany still. And I still don't
Especially defensively.
Yeah, and I still don't think Kovac is happy playing four at the back. I still believe that this coming summer, he'll move to a free system. And that is partially the reason that he signed a right-sided centre-back in Pavard and a left-sided centre-back in Lucas Hernandez that can also operate as split centre-backs. I think that he will go next season to a 3-5-2 or a 3-4-3.
You heard it here first.
And then use probably Hernandez, Sula, and Pavard as his back three centre-backs. Because I want to play a little game with you quickly. Okay. I want to play the game of the Bundesliga minutes for Bayern centre-backs. Oh, my bad, just knocked the table. Who do you reckon has the most?
Hummels.
Okay.
At centre-back.
Yeah, at centre-back.
Mind you, having thought about this, I'd be surprised if you asked this and it wasn't Sula.
I think I would say Sula, yeah.
It is Niklas Sula. Second most. I'll give you the four names. So we've got Hummels, we've got Sula, we've got Jerome Boateng, and we've got Javi Martinez.
Hummels.
You reckon Hummels has played the second most?
At centre-back. I think Martinez might have a lot of minutes, yeah, but I think he's played in midfield more.
Yeah. Second most minutes centre-back, Jerome Boateng.
Whoa.
Really?
1,650.
Bloody hell.
Hummels, 1,500. Javi Martinez only played 1,300 Bundesliga minutes, and some of them have been as a DM as well. But Sula comfortably the number one pick at centre-back, 2,400 minutes in the Bundesliga. So he is...
Yeah, because he's fit.
He is Kovac's number one choice.
His legs
he is
work.
Fit, and he's also a younger profile than a Hummels or a Boateng. Mm. They're both being phased out. One of them's going to leave this summer. I thought it would definitely be Boateng, but judging on the numbers, Hummels has played less minutes, maybe not as been as effective as Jerome Boateng at times. So I don't know whether that's just us having like an image of Boateng in our heads that his career's finished because of injury and they were going to let him leave last summer. I'd still expect Jerome Boateng to be the centre-back that sold this summer to make way for the two arriving, but I wouldn't be totally shocked if it was Mats Hummels as well. Niklas Sula, not bad on the ball, 93% pass accuracy. It's not bad for somebody who is 6'5" and looks extremely cumbersome. Although I did read an interview with, yeah, I think it might have been Renato Sanchez, who said he thought Niklas Sula was the quickest player in the squad.
Jeez.
Which is just really good. Outrageous, given that he is 6'5" and looks like he weighs 35.
I always thought his acceleration was bad, but his top speed was good. That was always my sense.
Too bad in terms of long ball. 6.3 long balls, 7 deep progressions. So I was pretty impressed by Niklas Sula, but I wonder whether that's because he's played so many more minutes at centre back than anybody else in that Bayern team that people just get used to funneling the ball through him, so he picks it up more often. But Dortmund Dortmund comparatively to Bayern, are just so far off Bayern's level defensively. Like, even under Kovac, I think their expected goals has gotten down as conceding 24 this season and scoring 80. Which is just like a massive swing. You look at Dortmund, 57 expected goals and 40 expected goals against.
Okay.
Like, that's a ridiculous swing of 16 goals conceded. Like, that's how good this Bayern backline has been, even though, as a unit, they've clearly not been at their best in this first season under Kovac. Second season, I think they'll shift back to a three. Howie was most effective at Frankfurt, and I think they'll use a backline, like I said earlier, of Pavard, Sula and Lucas Hernandez. So I am putting Niklas Sula in there, but equally I'm willing to give up a place because I feel like I've got stronger players further down the field.
I don't think that matters. I don't really care if one person ends up with every player going in.
I personally feel like Konate is a good shout, given that Leipzig have conceded the least amount of goals.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to make sense.
Despite the fact that Bayern have the best underlying numbers.
Dortmund's last couple of months may count against Akanji, but then he was injured for lots of that as well. So, He's
19 years old, which is mental.
Yes. On this season alone, yeah, it's got to be Konate.
Konate, all going with Konate alongside Matthijs de Ligt. Right, left back time.
Did anyone pick Ben Chilwell?
No.
That feels like a bit of an oversight on our part, because I was going to do Chilwell. I've actually gone for Folon Mendy at Lyon. And I think that because they haven't been second in Ligue 1, because they went out of the Champions League to Barca, we've kind of forgotten how amazing they were in the group stage of the Champions League last year. Like, they beat City away. In fact, they didn't lose a game in the Champions League until the second game of the round of 16, when they got pumped 5-1 by Messi, basically. Mm. 2 goals, 2 assists he got in that game. But Mendy, I think, looks like pretty much the complete article. And the reason I picked him over Chilwell is because, first, he's playing Champions League football. Secondly, his numbers are better. Like, 2.5 tackles and interceptions a game, not a lot, but he's playing on a dominant possession side. And really, his role is attacking. 1.6 chances created a match. That's the same as Paul Pogba. 2 dribbles with a 74% success rate. By comparison, Chilwell is about 1.3 dribbles and a 57% success rate. So from that point of view, I think I prefer Mendy too. Their defence is not spectacular, Lyon's. I think it's like seventh best in the league. But like I say, I think that Mendy is generally... The left is the more attacking flank because Depay cuts in and Mendy overlaps. And then the right-sided fullback is meant to be a bit more defensive. But I also think Bruno Genesio is rubbish. I just don't think he's a good manager, and he generally has a reputation of not being a sensational manager.
He's going this summer anyway.
Yeah,
he's gone. They've said he's going.
Oh right.
Yeah, they've announced that he's leaving. Class. Like in the summer. Oh. That's why there are rumors about Wenger going there, which would be
and Mourinho
sick.
I also saw Kike Setién, I think, next. Obviously he's left.
That'd be fun. Mm. That'd be really fun. I also think Mendy would just bang at like Arsenal, Spurs, like any club looking for a left back this summer, and a lot of them are.
Man City.
Man City Double could do Mendy. Worse, actually. Yeah, but I think they'll just go Chilwell, won't they?
God, I don't know whether they will. I feel like Leicester are just going to absolutely crucify them with the budget.
But what do they need? They need like a... Let's not get too much into the weeds, but they need a one or two central midfielders and a left back, and that's it.
Yeah, it is true. It's very true. I was myself very tempted to put Zinchenko in it.
Yeah, I mean, really? The difficulty
but
is
it's like, can you classify?
He's an attacking left back, and he's been great.
He has had a great
he's
year.
So good.
To be fair, it was on this year. If it was on this year alone, Joe, do you want to do your left back?
Yeah, go on.
Do you want me to jump in with my left back? You've got a surprise number coming in here.
I do have a surprise number.
Oh, wild card. Okay. I am putting pretty firmly forward Ashraf Hakimi for this role. I'm aware that he's also operated as a right back at times.
He dropped off as well.
I'm going to be honest.
He has flitted.
I think that this is the right decision straight away.
I think he's 18 starts at left back, 8 at right back, something like that. So he has been able to cover Piszczek when needed. But Piszczek's had an outrageous season himself as well. So he is still just 20. Let's not forget that. And he is on a 2-year loan deal from Real Madrid. Although I read an article this morning and I was actually so disappointed. Apparently, it was his agent. It was just quotes from his agent saying, yeah, he's returning to Madrid this summer. And he's probably... I mean, it's disappointing from a Dortmund perspective, but if he starts week in, week out in that left-back slot, which isn't easy to do under Zidane, then fair play, because he has had a brilliant season. Sadly, broke his foot against Wolfsburg last week or the week before, but not the worst timing to do it. You know, the season is kind of fizzling out now. I feel like Bayern are going to walk away with the Bundesliga and probably end up winning it by 6 points. I feel like Bayern are still going to win it by more than 2, though. I feel like it's kind of all starting to unravel a little bit.
Both are very poor.
I feel like that derby game just starting to unravel a little bit for Borussia Dortmund, that thumping by Schalke.
That was a bit embarrassing.
Either way, 1,700 minutes this season. I mentioned it earlier, but BVB's defence started terribly, has improved somewhat, still not exceptional. But it's a guy who's still putting up like 4 tackles and interceptions, 2 dribbles. You know, he's averaging over a shot per 90, which doesn't sound amazing, but for a left back, it does show that he is extremely aggressive.
Didn't he get 4 assists in one game?
He got a hat-trick of assists against Atletico Madrid in the Champions League.
Oh, my God. But there was also a cup game they won like 7-0.
Oh, maybe.
And I think he was involved in like 4 or 5 goals.
Funny. He reminds me a little bit at times of Andy Robertson, because he does just fly forward as part of a press at times.
He's unbelievably good.
He is so aggressive. I watched a couple of highlights this morning where he was actually operating basically as a left mid with Rafa Guerrero playing left back. Sick. And it was like a really interesting system where they were kind of interchanging as the left mid and the left back. And when one went forward, one dropped off. I thought that was pretty exciting from a Borussia Dortmund point of view. I think he offers also a really nice balance. Pato's talked about it in the past where you've got one fullback that's far more aggressive and attacking, and one fullback who's slightly happier to drop in and form more of a back three almost than everybody shuffles across. And I think that's probably now at this stage of his career what Piszczek's more happy to do. I get that he does still like to press forward and whip the ball in from the byline, but I don't think he has the legs to get up and down all day. So he's perfectly happy when he sees Hakimi flying forward, that everybody just shuffles in and feels part of that three. So I think Ashraf Hakimi, probably, I'm trying to think now in case I'm having a nightmare, but the best loan signing of anyone
this year.
Any of Europe's elite sides, unless there's somebody out there that I'm blatantly missing.
Tielemans at Leicester could potentially be
not bad, but he's only had a really good 3 months. I think Hakimi, arguably the best loan signing of any of the elite sides this year. If there is somebody I'm missing that's very obvious, apologies. But I'm putting forward fairly strongly Hakimi in this situation. You're going to have to, I think, throw up a big name.
Yeah, well, I don't have a big name at all. I've got a wild card at left back.
Oh, my God.
Because basically, when we decided on this, I started doing my research for the goalkeeper, and Joe and Pat just instantly started fighting for Europe's best, and I was sort of left with the scraps. And so I'm going to talk about a guy who's had a great year, but is obviously not in the same bracket as these two. That's Aaron Martin, who plays for Mainz. So he's been on loan this year at Mainz from Espanyol. But it's already been announced that Mainz have made his move permanent. They had an obligation to buy after he reached 10 appearances. He did that in the first 10 games. And he's been bought for €12 million. It was kind of baffling why Espanyol let him go, really. He made 62 appearances over the previous 2 years. Instantly became a sort of cult hero there. 4.1 tackles and interceptions per 90. 1.4 dribbles. 0.7 key passes from a left back. Similar kind of performance in his next year as well. But they had a sort of 29-year-old left-back called Didak Vila on their books, and they were happy to let him go. And Mainz have profited from it, really. They've been quite average this year, Mainz. They're currently 12th, but that's pretty much solely down to Jean-Philippe Mateta, who's their 21-year-old striker who scored 12 goals.
Yeah.
No one else has really contributed that much. Martin has been one of the standouts, though. He's played in all but one of Mainz's 30 games. 3 tackles and interceptions per 90, 0.6 shots, 1.4 dribbles, and 2 key passes per 90 from a left back. Only one player has provided more than his 2 key passes in Mainz's squad, and that's the same number as Kimmich for Bayern, and only one left back in Germany, which is Bastian Oczipka, who plays for Schalke, who I was talking about a few weeks ago, has provided more key passes per 90. 0.2 expected assists per 90. Just lethal going forward, this guy. And I was watching some highlights of him this morning, and he loves a crunching challenge too. He does not hold back, does Aaron Martin.
Where is he from?
He's Spanish. His official name is Aaron Martin Curacol.
Oh, I was going to say.
Called Aaron Martin.
I was like, where's this guy from? Stoke.
But he is not obviously probably going to make this team, but one to watch for the future. Only 22 as well. Signed for Mainz. Got a new contract until 2023. If he does well next year as well, maybe a move is in the offing to one of Europe's best.
Okay.
Good. I think it's a good find.
It's a good late shout, but I think it's got to be Hakimi.
I think it's Hakimi. Yeah, I agree. Hakimi,
straight I will go in with another name, just because I'll fire him off quickly, because I think we can all come to an agreement, or before you even do yours, that he's making it, is Frankie de Jong.
I mean, look, I'm happy to just put Frankie de Jong in. My issue here with the 4-3-3 is that if we go kind of position by position, then we might end up having to drop somebody good out because they're up against De Jong, you know, whereas we might get to our third candidate and we've all picked our weakest guy there. So I'm happy to put De Jong straight in if everyone else is, because my guy up against him was Tongi Ndombele, who's had a very good season. I mean, but I'm pretty certain in every single regard De Jong is better.
Are we playing
a 4-3-3 with two deep line midfielders, or one deep line midfielder and two more sort of going up and down?
I think we're going for the sort of Sarri, a DM, like a bit of a box.
So we've got De Jong playing there, or have we got De Jong? Because he can play anywhere, really.
I think De Jong is going to be the DM.
But I don't really mind. Like the way I looked at it was like, if there's enough defensive work in my midfield, I don't really care about having a DM. Like, I just need guys who are doing enough defence.
I'll rattle off a few statistics about Frankie De Jong for people who are at home aren't convinced. I mean, did you see yesterday, Ari Hahn, the Dutch player that played against Beckenbauer in 74, said that this kid is better than Beckenbauer?
Yeah, crazy.
I mean, absolutely outrageous.
To be fair, though,
to be fair, he is a freak.
He probably is as well, just because of, like,
modern science.
Exactly. The game in the 70s was not as good as it is now.
Freaky De Jong. He is outrageous. And the fact that Barcelona have already bought him. Do you know what? What is it? 68 million in the end? Something like that? Absolute snip.
Yeah. I look at that money and I'm like, That's not that bad.
I'll give you some statistics because they are a bit scary. You know, 14 deep progressions per 90 he's averaging this season through passing and dribbling, which is just freakish. By January, he'd attempted 65 dribbles from deep positions and failed with four of them. if you haven't watched highlights of Frankie de Jong playing, in particular, there was one match against PSV that really stands out. I think he completed 11 dribbles and in the centre of the
11.
Park. Yeah, 10 or 11 dribbles.
I love the Eredivisie, man. It's so dumb.
Or I think he went past 10 or 11 players cumulatively in the game. I don't know whether that counts as...
I thought you meant in like one dribble. You like had to go back and beat a
I mean, across the 90, I think he dribbled past 10 players. And there is... I showed Doogie one clip earlier where he picks the ball up on the edge of his own area from Onana.
Is this where he does like a turn in like the 6-yard box?
No, he picks it up and there's nobody around him. And he kind of travels 20 yards, travels 30 yards, beats one man, travels 40 yards, beats another man. And then he suddenly puts the ball and just knocks it about 20 yards. He is so fast.
He's so quick.
Sprints past five players.
You nearly made me choke on my rap. It was incredible. Incredible move.
Sprints past five players, and in the space of 10 seconds, he's taken out the entire PSV team. It's just it's incredible.
Why
to
did
watch.
You see him as his scanning before he picks up the ball? He knows exactly where the players are around him, and often he just lets the ball roll past him, and he's off. And his acceleration is just incredible.
You know, that iconic image of Luka Modric just on his head as Frankie just drops his shoulder.
But it's also one of those things where it's like, he's like a Swiss Army knife, but he decides in the moment what he's going to be.
Yeah.
So I think often, like, he's just a problem-solving player. Like, you put him out in a match, and some games, like, I think... I don't want to take credit away from Erik ten Hag, but I think sometimes he sends Frankie de Jong out and says, like,
go on, Frank.
I don't know if you're going to be a passer today or a dribbler today or a combination of the two, but I just assume you'll make the right decision in the moment. So against Tottenham last night, I thought he was much more of a passer than a dribbler in that game. Like, lots of one-touch passes and, like, really good, like, ball movement in that sense. And then in other games, he's just racing through the midfield. Mm. So, like, the fact that he always seems to know what he's capable of doing physically and make the right decision in the moment is a little bit of an underrated factor, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I think Max Allegri said a similar sort of thing, didn't he? He said that he tried to man-mark him with Bentancur, and then Frankie just... decided he was going to play as a centre-back and Bentancur didn't know what to do and he just started spraying balls. Equally as well, 5.5 tackles and interceptions per 90. Over 3 pressure regains as well.
That's a lot.
Which is just an outrageous number given that he's playing effectively at times as a third centre-back when he picks the ball up as well. Just an outrageous talent. So I think Frankie de Jong should be the DM. I'm willing to listen to your suggestions, but if it's not Frankie, I'm walking out.
Fair. Okay. I'll go next. I'll put forward my more defensively minded player, and I think he could play alongside Frankie de Jong. I think Frankie de Jong could play pretty much anywhere, really. But I'm putting forward 22-year-old Rodri, probably the best emerging defensive minded midfielder in Spain. Obviously came through the academy at Villarreal, made 84 appearances there, joined Atletico Madrid last summer for 20 million. Villarreal have obviously not done so well in his absence, to say, to put it lightly, really. They're now 14th, 5 points clear of the relegation zone with 3 games to play, so they could still very much go down. Meanwhile, Rodri's become a mainstay in Atleti's midfield, 42 appearances in all competitions. He's averaged 3.5 tackles per 90 and a further 1.3 interceptions. Only Koke, with 3.2 per 90, comes close to his tackle numbers in the Atleti squad. And despite having been sort of pretty uninspiring going forward and a bit of a disappointment overall, Atleti are yet again set to finish with the best defensive record, unsurprisingly, in the league. I think that'll be 7 of Simeone's 8 years at the club that they've done that. They've conceded 23 goals in 35 league games, which is 8 fewer than the next best, which is actually Getafe, who've been excellent.
I think they've been a bit lucky, though.
Who? Atleti?
Atleti. Like, when you look at defences, like, I think Valencia have been really strong as well. And, yeah, Getafe as well.
Mm.
Like,
Getafe coach is leaving.
Both the Madrid clubs have been behind them. And I think behind Leganés as well, like, defensively this season.
Yeah, I'm just separately to Rodri, I think I would be worried if I was Atleti losing Lucas Hernandez and Godín in the same summer.
Oh, 100%. Unless they've got serious plans lined up to do it. Their defence definitely needs looking at. But, I mean, people underestimate the talent in that midfield. Koke's still, you know, putting out great numbers.
Saul,
Rodri. Thomas Partey's had a great year playing all over the park as well. Only five players in Spain can top his tackle numbers per 90, and all of them, bar Arturo Vidal, play for sides fighting relegation. 57 passes per game as well, 91% pass accuracy, 5 pressure regains per 90.
That's insane, yeah.
5 deep progressions, which is pretty good from a DM. And reports last month, and they're consistently talking about this move to Man City.
Yeah, he's going.
Spanish,
you think?
Yes.
Yeah. You think he's going to be the Fernandinho boy?
Yeah. Yeah, I reckon him or Ndombele.
It seems like that.
Totally different profiles.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think Rodri's almost better fit. Spanish journalist José Ramón de la Morena, I don't know him personally, told the radio programme El Transitor that he wants to leave, and he's got a €70 million release clause, and that was backed up by Duncan Castles, who's a Manchester-based sports journalist. So I think 70 million... So yeah, he's very low cost compared to the other names that are being linked with him, like Ndombele and Ruben Neves. In comparison, I think Man City should definitely go for him.
Really, Roger? I feel like in the last month they've been linked to like Saul, they've been linked to Rodri, Tanguy Ndombele, Ruben Neves.
Seems like they're not quite sure. I feel like the journalists just talking.
Yeah,
rubbish.
I feel like the journalists just don't have a scoop.
The weird thing as well is those like totally different profiles. Yeah, like, I think Rodri and Ruben Neves are definitely in one camp. And then Saul and Ndombele are in another camp, which is like your dribbler who's going to like run around the midfield.
I don't see Ndombele as like a sitting in and dropping between the centre backs to pick the ball up occasionally.
But like Fernandinho isn't quite that either. Like last season, Fernandinho was like, I think he was first in the league for deep progressions per 90. Mm. Like it's just that when I watch him, I feel like I'm not really seeing that. I'm seeing him defending instead. But I mean,
there's consistent talk about Gundogan leaving as well. So maybe they'll need
to. Yeah, I think he probably will, to be honest.
Apparently he's very unhappy with his game time.
I mean, I like Gundogan, but I still look at that side and I think, wow, in some positions they are just like unbelievable. And then, oh, midfield, yeah, they've got like 34-year-old Fernandinho, who's still great, but he's 34, and Gundogan. It's just like not that exciting.
But they could also play Bernardo. They can play De Bruyne.
But those guys aren't real midfielders. I know we have this attitude that now, like, oh, those guys are central midfielders. They're not central midfielders. Like they're just not. Like,
but they are for Pep.
They've done a pretty good job of them.
He would never play De Bruyne on his own in the midfield for 90 minutes. Nor would he play Bernardo Silva there for 90 minutes. He'll play him there for a stretch of a game. But if you do that, you have to start doing clever things with fullbacks and stuff. Mm. And I don't know, all those things feel to me this season like ways of getting around a problem. And the problem is Fernandinho is old.
So who was your DM? Who are you going to go for?
I didn't really have a DM, but I just had three midfielders, two of whom put up excellent defensive numbers. So I didn't really feel the need to have like a proper DM. So I put an Ndombele in there, you know, who's got 3 tackles and interceptions a game in France, goes up to 4.5 in the Champions League, 2 dribbles a game in France, goes up to 3.2 in the Champions League, 1.5 chances created per game.
Where do you think he's going to go? If Rodri does in fact go to City.
Real Madrid's the link. If they don't get Pogba, like Ndombele makes sense to be the guy to go for. He's your all-action ball progressor in a way that Pogba used to be.
Yeah, because there's been loads of talk for like he'd be ideal for Tottenham, but I just don't think they could get him. I feel like he's out of their price.
He'd be amazing for Tottenham. He'd be amazing for Arsenal. Like Arsenal needs somebody to sit next to Torreira and progress the ball until Guendouzi's ready to take that role. If you've got Ndombele, it doesn't matter if Guendouzi's never ready. Like if you at Spurs, he'd be insane. At Man United, he'd be great. Like I don't know if he's going to go to any of those places. Oof. I think he can write his own ticket. I think he'll go where he wants.
I do as well. I think Frankie, though, has to be sitting at the base of our midfield. Tanguy could still go in. I think Rodri versus Frankie is only going to go.
I'm happy with you putting Frankie over Rodri.
If Rodri doesn't go at DM, then he can't go.
Yeah, I agree.
It's the problem.
I'll throw another player in there.
My next one is nailed on, by the way.
Go on, you go in with your next nailed on one, then.
Lo Celso.
I don't know whether that's nailed on.
I think with the possible exception of Frankie De Jong, name me a central midfielder who's been better than Lo Celso this season.
Rabiot in a very small sample size, probably.
Pogba.
over a full season, who has been better than Lo Celso this season?
Fernandinho?
He's missed half the season. Like he's been great when he's played. Alan has been great as well. I'd say Alan's the closest you get. But it's actually really hard to think of truly outstanding midfielders who've been great all year this season.
Yeah, true. My guy has not been great all year, hence why I wouldn't include him. Go on, take us through some of the reasons behind Lo Celso's rise to fame.
I genuinely think that he and De Jong like are not just the two best under 23 midfielders this year, but the best midfielders. Like, I really do think so. And Rabiot would have been the third if he'd been playing. He has obviously gone to Real Betis on a permanent now, 25 million euros. They made that loan move permanent for. Defensive numbers have dropped off as the season's gone on, but that's because he's moved forward more and more as the season has gone on. Started at the beginning of the year playing kind of all-round central midfield role, about four tackles and interceptions a game. He was leading his side with over three tackles a match, which is a lot. But now he's got 9 goals, 3 assists, I think, something like that. His expected goals and assists per 90, 0.5, which is pretty much a good forwards numbers. He's the second best midfielder in Europe for progressive passes and runs per 90 minutes. Who's Rabiot is top on Rabiot. 8.
Oh, yeah, because that's such a small...
Rabiot's top on 8. Yeah, yeah. Then it goes Lo Celso on 6.5. Then it's Verratti on 5.75, and then everybody else is down around 5.
Yeah.
So he's way ahead. Like, Thiago is about 5. Pogba is below 4. Like, and he's on 6.5 for Real Betis. 2.5 dribbles a match. Like, big shot numbers. He can put up creative numbers, though they're probably his worst at the moment because that's not really his role. He's just done everything at some point this season, and he just looks like... If you need a DM, you could put him in there, and his passing's sensational. Yeah. He'll be able to evade pressure.
How
and dribble
much did they
up
pick
the field.
Him up for? 25
mil.
25.
Good over a dead ball as well.
He'll basically do whatever you want. If you want him arriving in the box, he can do that. I think actually he'd have been a really good shout for that Man City Fernandinho role. Like, can do absolutely everything.
Can't
really
believe
good pass, a good dribbler.
Well,
I mean, I
not yet, but yeah.
It just makes absolutely no sense. I mean, they've brought in Paredes, which I think is a good move, but it just seems very, very strange. Like, that this season PSG have their two best midfielders have not played for them.
Betis have been average in quite a few games, though. They've had some stunning results, but then also mixed it with quite mediocre stuff.
Yeah, but I mean,
recently, in particular.
But I don't really think that like one guy in midfield is going
to.
Well,
you guys tried to blame all Dortmund's ills on the Kanji.
No, I was saying the entire Dortmund defense was very, very porous.
It felt very personal to me and the Kanji.
I'll jump in quickly then with my central midfield option as an alternate to Lo Celso. I don't think he's played enough minutes to quite make this team, but I think Arthur Melo at Barcelona is a fairly decent shout. 22 years old still. I can't remember a player that's come from South America and had as good a start in central midfield at a top team like Barcelona immediately quite as well as Arthur has. Yeah. I think at one stage this season, in one game, he hit like 140 passes. Like, he is an absolute metronome. 94% pass accuracy. It's the third best in La Liga. 11 deep progressions per 90. I think he's like around 0.9 expected goal build-up. Something like that for Barcelona. He calls himself the organiser, which I found quite amusing. Like, can you set your
very
own nicknames
guy
in football? Can you set your own nicknames? But either way, if you watch any of him, you'll see very clearly that he is fantastic at shielding the ball. Like, he has a great ability to put his body between himself and the ball and the opponent and win a foul. I think he's drawing over 3 fouls per 90, which is pretty impressive in central midfield. And this Barcelona midfield is in transition. Busquets has not had a good season this year. Ivan Rakitic, he's fine. He's okay.
He's old.
Vidal... never understood the signing. Still don't understand the signing, other than a little bit of combative.
Yeah, I think that's
backup
it.
That he's in there for. Frankie's obviously going to be insane alongside him. How old is Frankie? 21. Arthur 22. So pretty exciting.
Get Rabiot in.
If they got Rabiot, I think I'd just jump off a bridge. But only 1,300 minutes because obviously started very.
Wow,
slowly.
Really?
They had to bed him into the side at the start of the season. I think after.
Like, I thought
six
he'd been
like
a star all year.
No. Only 1,300 minutes in La Liga, but I think after like Christmas, he really started to find his feet. At the start of the season, it was like bits and starts. So I think
they realised as well that like with Coutinho, they wanted to play Coutinho and Busquets at the beginning of the season, and they realised that they did not have enough defensive legs in there. They couldn't carry Coutinho with Busquets' legs, and Arthur's not defensive enough.
But I think well done to Arthur for having such a big impact post Gremio, because I don't think anybody around this table thought he'd even be in conversation for this sort of area. So he's not quite there yet, but I'm expecting big things from him next season. Who are you going to go for, Dukes, in this position?
Well, I wanted someone a bit more attacking. And thought I'd give a shout out to Fabian Ruiz again.
Yeah, good year.
Don't think he's quite there on similar sort of Arthur levels. Obviously, he transferred from Real Betis last year. to Napoli. They paid his buyout clause of 30 million euros. He had a great year last year, but that was actually his first year of sort of big regular football there. 3 goals, 6 assists, 1.4 shots, 1.1 key passes, 2.3 dribbles. Could do a bit of everything in a Betis midfield. And then went to Napoli. First year in Naples, he's played 36 games, including 6 in the Champions League, 5 in the Europa League. 5 goals, 2 assists. Could probably hope for a bit more. But generally, he's played on, either on the left of Ancelotti's 4-4-2 or in central midfield. Rather than, he often played a bit further forward while at Betis. He does a bit of everything. 3.1 tackles and interceptions, 2.2 shots, 1.6 dribbles, 2.8 key passes per 90, 89% pass accuracy. For his first 5 games of this season, I know it's only a small sample size, but he averaged over 11 deep progressions.
Yeah.
He's sort of the one bright spot of other of Napoli's sort of otherwise pretty disappointing year.
Yeah, man. I watched Napoli against Arsenal, and it was like watching Fulham against Arsenal.
They were really poor, and they're, you know, they're 18 points adrift of Juve.
Creativity is his thing, though, right? Like, if you go to Who Scored and you, like, order your stats by key passes per 90... any list Fabian Ruiz is going to come out very, very near the top. He was over 3 at one stage this season.
100%. And just sort of, Napoli have only got 70 points from 34 games. Even if they win their remaining 4 games, they'll still finish 9 points behind last year's tally. They obviously went out in the Champions League group stages. That was quite unfortunate. They went out on...
That would still be third in the Prem, to be fair.
Goals scored. But there's a lot of weak teams. There's a lot of weak
there's
teams
a lot of
absolute
rubbish in there. Sure. Would you stick with Carlo next season? Or would you look for a slightly more exciting prospect?
If I were any club of that size, given the season Monaco have had, I'd try and get Jardim out of there.
Yeah, I think I would as well.
I'd give him another year, I think, just because of what he's the amount of experience he's got. And hopefully they can turn it around this summer. They do need to sign quite a few players. But I think Fabian Ruiz has done well considering the sort of side he's playing in and the form they've been in. And they let Hamsik go in February, mid-season, because they were so comfortable with how Fabian Ruiz had adapted to the league. So he deserves a lot of credit, but probably not ready for this team, I would argue.
Yeah, I would agree. So our current two midfield options, we're looking at Frenkie and Giovanni Lo Celso. A few other people will have been saying, I'm sure at home, where's Ruben Neves? You know,
well, do we have a third spot.
We do have a third spot. Is anybody suggesting Ruben?
I don't think he's had a great season,
like, but... I think we need an attacker now. A slightly more progressive central midfield option.
I don't think you could put in a sitter unless you're saying, oh, Frankie's putting him
on. I'll throw a very much more attacking option in there. He has at times played as a 10, which might well hold him back from this
team. No, I think that counts. I think it's fine.
But James Maddison, I'm putting in here.
This season,
unbelievable, really. Claude Puel played him as, I would say, a genuine 10. Brendan has played him more as an 8. I think he's part of a more obvious midfield three of Wilfred Ndidi, Yuri Tielemans and himself, now under
Such
Brendan.
An
and I think
midfield.
It actually works better. I looked at some of his shot numbers. His shots per 90 have gone up since he started playing deeper. Mm. He's really, really good at finding a lot of space as well. And his creativity, obviously, is well publicised. Over 3 chances created per 90, I believe, this season. At one stage...
Been a friend, right?
Yeah. At one stage this season, he created the most chances of any player in Europe's top 5 leagues.
Jesus.
Ahead of Messi.
I'm not surprised. His
ahead of anyone else.
Amazing.
He's far and away the most creative Englishman. Yeah. I think he's on 81 chances created, something like that, maybe more now. That was when I read the article. And Raheem Sterling was kind of 55 as the second best. Then I think it was Jadon Sancho, about 40. So you're looking at like double the creative numbers of a player like Jadon Sancho from that sort of 10 spot. He's really impressive over a set play as well. Mm. Obviously, about 60% of his chances created come from open play, about 40% from dead balls. But clearly, that is an underutilized weapon by a lot of top teams. I think, was it Ted Knutson did a really good article on the underutilization of set pieces recently?
Yeah, that's their thing.
And James Maddison is comfortably one of the better dead ball specialists in the Premier League. He's also great at winning and drawing a foul in and around the edge of the area. He kind of specialises in just leaving a trailing leg dangling as he nicks the ball away and then getting fouled. 2.7 fouls per 91 this season, so pretty impressive. I just think for a player who joined, I think he's the best player that's ever stepped up from the Championship to the Premier League.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, I agree.
At least in my recent memory, I don't ever remember a player being able to produce the same output that he did at the Championship in the Premier League.
Especially as a 10 pretty much in that position.
I mean, I suppose
no
you
drop off.
Like Kevin Phillips when Sunderland
That's
came
a good
up.
Point.
I don't really,
win the European gold.
But yeah, like in recent years.
I mean, I don't really remember Kevin Phillips that well. I guess I was only like young as well, 8, 10 years old when that happened. Yeah. But in my recent memory, James Maddison has stepped up better than any player. I think he's been the best creative midfielder in the league. Which is pretty impressive for a 22-year-old from Leicester who's been playing under Claude Puel for half the season.
With the exception of, like, say, David Silva.
I'd agree with you. Bernardo Silva as well.
No, I think he's a better creator. I don't think Bernardo Silva's been
Maybe he's been more industrious this season, Bernardo, hasn't he? He's been more industrious. How old's Dele, by the way?
23? 22.
Yeah, Dele can make this.
So we haven't. I haven't played.
Yeah, to be fair to Dele, he hasn't played that much. When he's played, he's been sensational.
Second striker,
he hasn't
as well.
Played.
Yeah. So we've not included Dele Alli. Maybe a little bit controversially, but
the best three would include Dele Alli. But realistically, like, he doesn't deserve to be there relative
on his
to
year,
Maddison.
Exactly.
I think.
Yeah, relative to Maddison. I think Maddison should be our progressive, more attacking midfielder. Who are you putting forward, lads?
Do you have an attacking?
Mine was Fabian Ruiz.
Okay.
Who was your third midfielder? You Fabian Ruiz, Rodri.
I dropped Bentancur.
Oh,
interesting.
Okay.
Yeah, he didn't make the cut.
Okay. Well, I've got an option potentially even more attacking than Maddison.
Oh, wow.
Which is Kai Havertz at Leverkusen.
Oh,
nice. Who is called a CM. They're still calling him a CM. I think we're going to see him stop being called that at some point in the near future. Yeah. Because if you look at all his numbers this season, they're down. Except for dribbles and shots.
Okay.
Like, his defensive numbers have gone down. Mm. His creative numbers have gone down. On the other hand, his dribbles have gone up from 1 to 1.5. And the success rate, you can really see, like, the way that players are developing physically if you look at their completed dribbles versus unsuccessful dribbles. So last season, was failing with more dribbles than he succeeded and had about one dribble a game. This season, he's succeeding with more dribbles than he fails, 1.5 a game. And 19 years old, you sort of think, where could this guy end up as he develops physically? Shot numbers about 2.5 a match, I think, and they're pretty solid. But 3 goals and 8 assists in the league last year as an 18-year-old. This year, 14 goals, 3 assists. For a 19-year-old, that is obscene. And his XG numbers are pretty much right there too. Like, I mean, he's a bit ahead. He should have maybe 14 goals and assists or 15 goals and assists instead of 17.
Okay.
But Kai Havertz, I just think, is like one of the best young kind of attacking midfield prospects I've ever seen. Like, he just looks outrageous. The only question is, because he's a little bit...
The only question is how long till he's at Bayern.
And also with Dele Alli this season, like, Dele Alli is like continued to put up amazing attacking numbers while actually doing more midfield work than he's ever done. Mm. He's doing more ball progression, more defensive work than he's ever done while still doing the attacking stuff. Havertz, in order to do the attacking stuff, has dropped all the defensive stuff. So he might find that he basically either needs to be at a club like Leverkusen, who are going to devote everything to making sure he can score goals, or he needs it to be at a super club where they have all the ball and the fact that he's not going to defend doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because I'm not really sure, like, whether... He's a little bit Aaron Ramsey-ish at the moment.
Has he got a buyout clause as well?
I don't know. I mean, everyone at Leverkusen supposedly has a buyout clause, like Julian Brandt supposedly has one. But, I mean... Leverkusen, you look at their team, and I'd take like 4 or 5
it's
of their players.
A hell of a lot of talent.
Yeah, like Jonathan Tarr's there, Wendell's there, Brandt's there, Leon Bailey's there, Kevin Folland's had a good season. You know, like they've always got interesting players knocking about. So Kai Havertz, to me, has had such a sensational season. I wouldn't necessarily bet on him having as good. I'd rather put my money on Maddison replicating his numbers next season than Havertz. But on the basis of the season he's had, you have to give him credit for it, I think.
He scored one of my favourite goals this year as well. I can't remember who it was against, stupidly, but it was a sort of swinging volley from the outside of the box that did that thing where it hits the upper stanchion and you can hear the sound of the post as it flies into the net. It's beautiful.
Yeah, though sometimes it bounces straight out
sometimes
when the net bulging
does,
and I hate that shit.
No, but you could just hit it, went bang, bang, into the hit the post, into the net. It's just peachy.
I think one of the best ones is when it goes into the net high and then it stays
still
high
rises.
As it rolls.
Yeah,
around.
That is definitely the best one. That means
so
it's really
good.
Even hit. And that's a nice net tension level. Dudes, you can pick then between mine and Pato's, Kai or James.
It's a really difficult decision. I feel quite a lot of pressure on this. Got to admit, I've seen a lot more of Maddison play this year. So that's probably skewed me, but I'm going to go with James Maddison.
Okay. I think that's the right choice.
So far, our team is looking like Onana, Aaron Wan-Bissaka, De Ligt,
Kanate,
Hakimi, Frenkie, Lo Celso, and James Maddison. Now nice. We move into a forward line. Where two spots are
I've
already
had two
seated.
Players in Dukes. How many players have you got here?
I've got Onana.
He's got Onana, and nice. I've got two players as well. I've got three, actually.
Yeah.
But one's Frenkie's, doesn't really count. Okay, forwards. Now, we've already got Jaden locked in, obviously the outstanding wide talent, I would say, in Europe of his age group. And then Kylian Mbappe, who I believe is, what, second in the running for the Golden Boot? Across Europe, behind Leo. Okay, who wants to go third?
Well,
on the other forward.
I wanted to get this guy in, but it actually doesn't really. I think Mbappe's best on the wing, but I'm playing him centrally to play this.
Really?
I always think.
This is a controversial opinion.
But I think Mbappe is a striker.
I think he will be, but I think right now he's better on the wing.
Okay, but he played on the right last season. This season he's playing more of a forward.
Yeah.
Like, he hasn't played on the left since he left Monaco.
Particularly in the big Champions League games when he's been leading the line.
I moved him for someone else.
I'm playing him as a striker.
Yeah, but you moved him for a really weird choice.
I'm playing him as a striker to get this guy in because I think he's been great.
Same.
So I'm playing Ousmane Dembele.
Fair.
21, second season at Barcelona. 14 goals, 6 assists in 40 games. That doesn't sound exceptional, but only 24 of those have been starts. So 20 goal involvements in 24 games. Averages a goal contribution every 104 minutes in the Champions League, every 128 minutes in the league.
Ridiculous.
His stats are just sort of beggar belief, really. I know he comes on sometimes off the bench, so he can be slightly skewed by playing against hard defences, but 2.1 shots, goes up to 3.5 in the Champions League, 3.7 dribbles, 2.4 key passes, goes up to 3.2 in the Champions League. Also puts in 1.5 tackles and interceptions. And for someone that's considered someone that doesn't necessarily, maybe a bit of an individualist, that's a pretty big defensive output from a sort of flair player. 0.5 expected goals and assists per 90. He's 12th for minutes in the Barcelona squad, ridiculously. 3.7 dribbles, second best in the Barcelona squad. His key passes number also second. He's provided some great moments as well, really carried Barcelona in that sort of slightly dodgy period they're having. I think it was around January. Scored in a lot of games in a row then. And who can forget that goal in the Champions League against Spurs when he ran sort of the length of the pitch?
Yeah.
That was an awesome moment. Made Kyle Walker-Peters look like an absolute fool, really.
I mean, to be fair, it is Kyle Walker-Peters.
But he hasn't played every game. But at 21, he's been a sort of vital component of a side that could go on to win the treble quite easily.
But has he got enough minutes? I know he's played 40 games, but like you said...
He has been switched in and out with Coutinho a lot. And Valverde, when he plays 4-4-2, although he's slightly moved away from that in the latter months, he doesn't really fit that system. Coutinho is often used... for, you know, a slightly more defensive style. Dembele is not necessarily relied on. And there is a lot of criticism of Coutinho not fitting in with Barcelona.
There's a lot of criticism of Dembele as well.
Some of his decision-making is rash. I will say that.
Yeah.
And sometimes he picks the wrong choice. Sometimes he dribbles when he should pass and shoots when he should pass. But he's such an exciting talent.
For me, he's got the same issue as Leroy Sané at Manchester City in that he is an individualist playing in a system squad.
Sané is more of a team player than Dembélé at times.
Maybe, but I would argue that Leroy Sané also doesn't fit into Pep's ideology of sort of being industrial even from wide positions, which I think Raheem Sterling does. Whereas, and the same could be leveled at Ousmane Dembele, where I just don't think he's willing to sacrifice enough personal stuff for the team to work in that system. I think if you put either of them in any other team in the world, they would be the best player probably.
Yeah.
But in those specific teams, they're like proper system sides with individual star players like Ousmane Dembele and Leroy Sané. I feel like it's like chalk and cheese. Like if Ousmane Dembele was playing for PSG, it would be like, wow, look at this freak kid. He's unreal.
Yeah.
Whereas at Barca, it's like, well, you know, the system trumps the player.
Yeah, I kind of agree. Like, I remember reading something last year which said that Pep was kind of trying to turn Leroy Sané into Pedro. And I do think that there's some truth in that. I think he would genuinely rather have that guy who is just like a system player but had Leroy Sané's physical attributes.
Because you've got Leroy, have you?
I've got Leroy Sané, yeah. Because, yeah. I mean, his numbers are still ridiculous. Like, yeah. 10 goals, 10 assists in the Prem.
Amazing.
4 goals, 4 assists in the Champions League in under 400 minutes. He's overall contributed to a goal every 80 minutes.
Yeah.
There are 9 players across Europe who've got double figures for goals and assists, which I imagine will go up this weekend. And he's one of them. Like, I mean, it's just, I can't, his numbers are better in the Champions League. You know, he gets over 2 shots a game in the box in the Champions League. Like, his dribbles, 2.7 a game in the Prem, 4.3 a game in the Champions League.
It's crazy.
Like, he's just so good.
He is the perfect Bayern wide man as a replacement for Ruben Robbie, in my opinion.
I literally think he...
Different to Robin, but yeah.
I think Man City are honestly the weirdest team in the world for him to be at.
So do I.
I think
he's such a good option for them, though, because their other wingers all.
But he's way too good to only play 400 Champions League.
I think he should definitely play more, but don't you think it's so. Having a left winger that sticks on the left wing, gets to the byline, and he's so good at getting to the byline and just pumping these balls back to the top of the 6-yard box and often finished by Aguero or Sterling. He's such a different weapon to even Mahrez and Sterling now, who cuts inside a lot more than he used to. He's such a byline player.
For Pep, he probably does enjoy it, but for the player, for Leroy, like, he's got to move.
Oh, I think he's got to move for himself.
I think if he were at Real Madrid, he'd be a potential Ballon d'Or winner. And I still think he is, but I don't think he'll do it at City. Mm. I really don't. Like, I just think...
Neither do I.
He's just one of those guys who, like... He actually does remind me of the young Cristiano Ronaldo. Like, he's physically dominant, incredibly fast, can shoot, can create, can score, like, can dribble. Like, he's just got everything you want. But in a way, like, I find it really strange that we've talked about what a great season that Heung-min Son has had, who's been involved in fewer goals. I mean, obviously on a worse side. But I think if you swapped them, I think that Son would be in a quite similar situation to Sané at Man City, just because the type of player he is. Whereas I think Sané would be quite... They're quite similar to me, I think.
I don't know, man. I think Son would be amazing for Pep. Like, no, Sané
is amazing for Pep, like in terms of his actual production. But we don't talk about him as being amazing because, like you say, he's a bit more of a soloist. That's when Son's at his best. And I kind of feel like if Sané were at a team of the standing of Tottenham, where he's the guy who's going to make something out of nothing, he's the guy who's going to produce magic, you know, like there's a one-man counterattack and that man is Leroy Sané, I think that we would talk about him. Like, imagine if he was at, like, Atletico Madrid or something, where they're constantly playing on the counter and Leroy Sané, every week, there's a highlight of him burning 5 defenders and scoring.
It's true.
I don't know. I wish we could see that, to be honest.
I mean, I will throw one name into the hat. Pato's not happy that he's being mentioned in this conversation.
This is fucking stupid.
So I'm moving Kylian Mbappe to the left wing position, Jadon on the right, and I am putting forward Piontek as the striking option for the young team of the season. I get that he is not. He's not this level of player. He definitely isn't the level of Leroy Sané or the level of Ousmane Dembélé, who have way higher ceilings than him. But this is based on this season. And this season, his record is frightening. I don't care how much he's
outperforming Tammy Abraham
goal
then. It's nothing to do with that. Jovic has had a better season.
Tammy is not doing it in a year. I don't think he has.
Like, he has, though.
Underlying numbers, I would agree. He's definitely not running as hot as Christoph Piontek. But Piontek is, I believe, 5th or 6th for the Golden Shoe in Europe. He's 23 years old. Ooh. 19 and 21 for Genoa in the first half, and then he's got 10 in 12 starts for Milan in the second half of the season. Great. Admittedly, had a huge drop-off at Milan. Like, at Genoa, he was running at 4.4 shots per 90 at Genoa. At Milan, 2.6 shots per 90. So very clear drop-off. Slightly worrying, although I saw the Genoa shareholders meeting notes from today, and Piontek is earning 33k a week at Milan. Like that.
Wow.
Am I just being an idiot? But that feels like a sort of Burnley, Ashley Barnes wage.
Well, it was only a couple of years ago that he's playing for Cracovia in Poland, so maybe he's just...
Yeah. Admittedly, though, he did crush it out there. Like, he was going like 1 per 90 in terms of expected goals in a rubbish division, though. I don't even want to pronounce the name of it, but at Cracovia he was doing very well, 21 in 36. But this season, it's hard to argue against a person who scored more than 30 goals in all competitions at 23 for 2 different teams in 2 different systems.
Has he got more than 30 goals? I thought he had 29.
I think he's got 31 in all competitions.
All right, okay, maybe there aren't some cup ones on his Wikipedia page.
Well, who scores got him down as 31?
Okay, fair enough.
Who scores got him down in 31 in 42?
It's pretty good.
It is a really impressive record.
Like, he's had an unbelievable season. I'm happy to buckle under the pressure of one of your two picks. And it is a coin toss between the two, because Usman's outscored him, hasn't he?
He's got 14.
But Leroy is just so dangerous. Leroy's been involved in more goals, less minutes.
Dembele's been involved in the fewest goals, despite playing for Barcelona.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, which makes me feel like that is not great.
He's only started 24 games. But Sané's started more games.
But that's a point in itself. Like, I think Sané has started 24, in fact. Like, Sané's got 1,800 minutes in the league. I don't know how many Usman's got.
I don't have his minutes down here, but like, unfortunately. I think it's a big call.
But I feel like that's a part of it, right? Like, being a regular for your side.
George, you pick it.
Neither of them have been regulars.
Sancho, yeah, he has. He's like their 10th most used player, Leroy Sané.
Yeah, Dembele's their 11th.
How many minutes has he got? Yeah, but you just now said that you tried to use it as like...
It's all going wrong.
No, but you tried to defend him by saying, well, he hasn't played very much, but now you're saying, well, he actually has played a lot.
I'm saying Leroy Sané has played a lot and has been very good. They both played a comparable amount of minutes.
Yeah, but then you can't use it to defend him.
How many minutes has Leroy Sané played?
I said like 1,800.
Okay, so...
In the league. That's in the league alone.
So Usman has 1,700 minutes in the league.
Okay, so he's played 100 minutes fewer and been involved in 6 goals fewer.
Yeah, and in the Champions League, he's played...
Been involved in 6 goals.
400 minutes. He hasn't scored four more.
Yeah, he's scored 14 goals.
In La Liga.
Because
if we're talking about... Well, then he hasn't scored four more because Sané's got 14 goals in the league and Champions League.
Which is a similar number. It is better than Usman. He is pretty much better than Usman in all areas in terms of statistics.
My point is like you can either say he hasn't played enough he'd have better numbers or you can say he hasn't played enough minutes to be kind of in the 11. You can only have it one of the two ways.
Again, it's the age
I think
old...
he's played enough minutes to be in the 11. I just want him to have better numbers.
Sure. I mean, we're doing this before Barcelona Liverpool. Who knows what Ousmane Dembele might do tonight if he starts. They might go on to win the Champions League. They might go on to win a treble. And in a couple of weeks, we'll probably look quite stupid if we put Sané in over Dembele.
Piontek. George, you decide.
I don't think he'll start.
Who do you want to put in the team, George? Leroy Sané. George's finger of death has landed on Leroy Sané. Just before we move on to facts with Rafa Benitez, which Doogie is taking part in this week, I asked you guys on Twitter for some of your suggestions, so I am going to rattle a few off to the boys and see what they say. Just get a yay or a nay in the conversation and what you think of their season.
Okay.
Luka Jovic.
Yay.
Yeah, I mean, really exciting. Just a revelation, really. I think it's all gone a bit quiet on that move to Barcelona. I haven't seen so much of that in recent weeks. But if Eintracht Frankfurt can keep hold of him, fantastic.
If one of you had brought Jovic, I probably would have sided with you over Sané.
Oh, God's sake. Van den Beek. Connor says no one mentions him and he gets overlooked because of De Jong and De Ligt's level.
I think he's massively overperforming this season in a way which is not quite sustainable. He still looks like a very, very good player. But to me, like... Yeah, that you take away Frankie de Jong and I think Ajax become quite ordinary. Like, whereas you take away Van der Beek and I think you could plug somebody else in and they'd be basically fine.
A lot of people saying Trent Alexander-Arnold over AWB.
I've had so many arguments with this with people on various WhatsApp groups. It is, but the more exceptional year...
Yeah,
has been Wan-Bissaka, in my opinion.
Yes, I can remember instances of Liverpool getting beaten down that right-hand side, whereas there's a phenomenon in American football called the shutdown cornerback, which is that offences just will not throw to an area on the field because they know they will not get past that cornerback. And that's kind of what AWB's become. Mm. Like, you're now at the point where you're like, okay, if Arsenal went and signed AWB this summer, I would think nobody is going to score a goal from our left flank for the next 10 years. That's how I'd feel.
Okay, Matteo Guendouzi. Pato particularly.
He has had a great season in that he's been a useful part of a club competing to get top four. But he's been exceptional more for what it looks like he could be than for what he is.
He's nowhere near this discussion.
Yeah,
he's a very flawed player at the moment.
To try and put Matteo Guendouzi alongside of Frankie de Jong is just...
He's still 2 years younger than Frankie de Jong. Like, I'm not saying he's going to reach that level, but like as in... He looks like he's an excellent prospect, but he is a flawed player currently.
Declan Rice, Dukes.
No.
No, that was so good. That was like a joint.
Same Guendouzi situation, right?
Yeah, I mean, I like Declan Rice, but he's a promising young English player, and that's all I'm prepared to put at his name at the moment.
Lozano? A lot of people saying Irving Lozano. I don't think... Irving Lozano feels like another sort of player that comes out of the Eredivisie that's a bit Jahan Bashi.
Potentially.
Yeah, though, potentially. That poor bastard hasn't even played.
With crunching numbers out there, but not quite there.
And Steven Bergwijn as well at PSV has had a really good season, hasn't he?
I've got a few other shouts for players like Lucas Torreira in there.
Again, Torreira, I think, looks like a really good player, but actually has had an up and down season.
Great start, I think.
Josh Downs says Diogo Jota. Again, I did mention Diogo Jota in the office. I think he has had an outstanding season, but comparatively to some of the other forward options we've got on this list, I just don't think he's at their level. The same way I don't think João Félix is quite there yet. No. João Félix, I think...
Do it in a big league.
Has to do it in a top five league before
did
he
in
gets,
the Europa League,
gets mentioned in this conversation.
Every week at the moment, Benfica are winning a game like 6-0, and every time I go and watch the highlights, João Félix has scored a hat-trick.
Yeah, I do know what you mean.
Like, he looks like a star, but it's like, why not put Tammy Abraham in?
David Brooks.
Sure.
Yeah, not at this level, but yeah, great season.
Yeah, I mean, like, not over Sancho.
I think the same. And then one final one, Tagliafico.
Tagliafico's 26.
26. So, Finn EFC123 on Twitter, you're an idiot, and it's time for facts.
It's a fact. Facts.
Right, it's time for facts with Rafa Benitez, and I tend to like to bring a theme to the table, and the theme this week is various failures throughout my life. I have had a few. It certainly hasn't been a smooth road. And yeah, I've got three for you today, as usual.
Failures.
I'm gonna take a photo of Diggy.
As usual, there are two lies and one truth. I'm very distracted by this iPad in front of me.
I'm taking a photo.
Taking a photo.
Yes, you look absolutely ridiculous taking a photo of an iPad.
I wanted to distract him as much as possible, and he looks absolutely smashed.
Diggy,
you look wrecked.
Look at this picture, George.
We'll post that up on Twitter after this, because that's an incredible...
Oh my goodness.
Incredible snap.
I look like sort of a drunk Tintin gone wrong. Is that scar? It's because you
run your hand through your hair, which automatically conveys the mood
I've
of
always,
drunkenness.
I've always done that.
I don't think it's an issue.
It's recalling back to what I once had, I think.
That is classic. Like, if you were famous, that would get sold to a tabloid.
Go on then, dude.
He's lost his head.
Right, three failures.
First one, I got rejected from the Scotsman's Most Beautiful Baby 1995 on account of my massive forehead.
He's listed that as a failure.
Oh, so good.
It's so good.
I thought he's gonna be like test seed or advised for. I think as a child where he can have no bearing over the result. Oh god.
Right, so that's number one.
Oh god.
To clarify, we'll get onto it in a bit, but the Scotsman is Scotland's most popular newspaper. And the second one was I failed a Guinness World Record attempt at the amount of grapes you can eat in 1 minute. And the third one was
grapes.
I shat myself attempting to scale. Let me finish.
Said it so serious.
yeah, you had no right to finish that fact.
So I shat myself attempting to scale Mount Kilimanjaro.
No.
The boys have gone a bit delirious. So. Where do we want to start, really?
Oh my god, we're starting with the shit. You shat yourself. You shat yourself climbing Mount Kilimanjaro.
Yeah, so it's my first year at, it's the summer of my first year at uni. Wanted to do something for charity.
Christ.
Decided to try and climb Mount Kilimanjaro with three mates.
Why didn't you just shit in a bush?
It was about 800 metres and it's the final ascent. And I woke up and I had really bad altitude sickness, like really bad. Like they were like, if you'd been asleep any longer, you would have got brain damage sort of thing. So they put me on a...
Is that how it works?
They put me on a stretcher.
So what stage did you take the Viagra?
Sorry?
So you're going to take, isn't it? For altitude sickness?
You can take it for
altitude I never knew. I thought you just completely lost the plot. No, didn't take any Viagra. Instead went on a stretcher. Four men had to carry me down because they can't. You can't get a helicopter up there, obviously. And after about a couple of hundred meters, I tried to tell them I need the loo, but I obviously couldn't speak, so I was so oxygen deprived, so it didn't come out as anything really cohesive.
You just shat on a stretcher.
So I sort of beckoned to like put me down, and I couldn't really walk, but I went over to this rock and I couldn't take my trousers off. Needed to go for a shit, so I just shat myself.
Sorry, but you did it behind a rock.
Yeah.
All right.
Do you know how many memes are being made right now by the Football Daily fan base?
So that was number one.
You know, that's Gary Lineker shat on that sort of meme. You realise it is now Doogie shat on.
I really hope that isn't true because I feel so sorry for everyone involved in that. That's so
awful. It was pretty bad, so and then they had to put me back on the stretcher.
You didn't actually make the summit.
No, no. I never knew.
800 metres short. Yeah. Dead.
It was a long way up as well.
So what was
like
the
weeks climbing?
Did you also have like food poisoning or like what
was
the shitting situation?
Just you get really bad altitude sickness, and when you get it, you stop, you lose all your appetite. And I just became a bit delirious
because I've had altitude sickness, but somebody actually told me recently that they had a similar situation from altitude sickness. Yeah. And I didn't really know that was a thing.
No, big time. I mean,
in my experience, it's headaches and sick
feet. It's 5,800 meters up, so it's a bloody big mountain.
Too much knowledge there. That was too much knowledge. He just fucked himself. Yeah. 2,000. That is a googled fact.
He might have shat himself on, say, a Scottish mountain.
Okay, so we'll move on
like
to number
Ben
two.
Nevis or
on, number
which
two.
Was a failed Guinness World Record attempt at the amount of grapes eaten in one
what
minute.
What is the record?
Feels deep.
Don't know. A low 70s, but I didn't make it.
How many did you make?
Do you have to do one at a time?
I made something like 45.
Do you have to do one at a time, or can you do a handful?
No, you can do any technique you want.
Can you compress them and then just like hoover?
No, I think they've got to start whole. But okay. I suppose you could do whatever you want after that. But you can shove in quite a few early doors, and then it really comes back, really like fills up. So I think I made about 45, which I was quite pleased with.
What made you think you could do it? Was it because of your weird gullet?
Yeah,
ability?
I don't know really. So Guinness World Records go
like
around to different schools, and they went to. They went to one boy at school.
That's so disruptive of
for
them.
An eating
just to turn up at school, be like, "Do I eat as many grapes as you can?"
For an eating challenge. No. For an eating challenge. So one guy thought he could eat the amount of what they call Weetabix in a minute, which is he
hard
didn't do
though.
That either.
Is it like
really
two
difficult.
Or something?
Yeah, it's not very many.
Dry as fuck.
And so he failed that, and then. Beforehand, before arriving, they were like, would anyone else like to try something? And I'd always liked grapes and thought I was quite good at eating them. So put myself forward for grapes in 1 minute, didn't make it. That was second failure.
Okay, wow.
Third one was getting rejected from the Scotsman's Most Beautiful Baby 1995 on account of a massive forehead. Right. So the Scotsman, every year, it's the biggest national paper in Scotland. They do an award for the most beautiful baby. It's not really a big thing unless you're sort of 30-year-old mum and quite competitive, which my mum was. And so she put me forward. I was quite a good looking baby, but I did just have this fuck off massive forehead. which has always held me back, and I still got it. I mean, it's 4.5 inches now because I had to have it measured for Stat Wars.
What
and
the fuck?
It was about 3 back then. It was half face and then just the rest was forehead, just going back and back and back.
How do you tell with a baby? You had a lot of hair by this point then.
No, not
so I was
going
to say a lot of babies. Like, babies are all forehead.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it was just it was quite bulbous. It sort of really came out quite a long way.
Oh wow!
And then you know they don't really like to tell you why your baby didn't win because it can be quite offensive. But my mum insisted.
They did.
And they were like, "He's obviously got quite a big forehead." That was that.
Okay, so
I don't know.
Oh my
pattern.
God.
I don't know about it for you, but for me, story number two is the truth. I think he fucked it with the detail of the height of Kilimanjaro too accurate.
Sure.
And then I just don't believe a newspaper under any circumstances, no matter how much a loving mother complains,
that's
would ever
point.
Say it's because you read.
I don't know, in the 90s people did say
no,
some
man.
Fucking
could you
weird
imagine
shit.
Typing that back or writing that letter back? Your son has not won it because he has a fuck off forehead. It just didn't happen.
Yeah, but you'd be like, she already
knows. It wasn't official, it was just like a silent chat. She was just like, obviously the forehead.
Oh, no, I just don't believe it.
Come on. No, to say what, in person?
Yeah, I wasn't there.
In person, to your mother there, pointed at you and went, nah, come on.
Well, I think it was just like a gentle letting down.
Which just like the finger went up and yeah.
We like the bottom half.
I think
so
number two,
top.
What do you reckon, Pat?
Yeah, I'm happy with number two. It feels like something you'd have done.
Okay, number two we are committed to. Please, Doogie.
Incorrect.
Oh!
I shat myself. Attempting to climb Mount Kilimanjaro.
Oh, those poor blokes.
Oh, poor Doogie Christie.
How big was the rock?
Doogie from now on is only to refer to in the same realm as, you know, whenever Gary Lineker tweets and every reply is just shat on pitch or just shat on whatever footballer he's talking about.
Like shat on racism. Yeah, yeah. Like whatever he's talking about.
Whatever Doogie tweets now, you just need to reply.
Shat on combined 11.
Yeah, shat on combined 11.
I mean, I'm glad I did it. If I'd stayed up there any longer, I would have been really, you know, in a bad way. So I'll take waking up. But the weird thing was they carry you down. They carry you down a further 1,000 meters, and as soon as you get to a lower, you know, air level, that doesn't make any sense, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And the oxygen comes back in your brain, you instantly feel fine. So I basically came round covered in shit, and I was like, I haven't made it. That was the first I realised I hadn't made it. I was completely delirious.
Oh wow!
Oh, what, hadn't made it to the top?
Yeah, hadn't made it to the top.
It's still very impressive to get 800 meters short, dude.
Yeah, it was just a bit frustrating. You also have to pay to do it, so it was like a grand to do it.
Oh,
and I ended up with poo all over my pants.
Right, what a note to end on for this week's show. Chat on Critchley makes a big return as the Sunday Vibes Extra Time. I hope you enjoyed. If you've got any topics you want us to speak about next week, please do tune in. We also have another podcast going live this week. I believe it's called The Game's Gone Mad, hosted by our very own Olivia Dodd.
Yes.
That'll be available in all the usual podcast places, so please do go and download that. Thanks very much for listening. Au revoir.
Bye.
Bye.